Let's push into another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word by opening our Bibles to Genesis chapter number 25, where I want us to begin at verse number 5. Now, we know that after Sarah's death, Abraham made arrangements for Yitzhak to get married. And that happened when Yitzhak was 40 and Abraham was 140. Not only did Yitzhak get married, but so did Abraham. And he starts a brand new family with a woman named Keturah. For the next 20 years after the marriage of Isaac and Rebekah, they couldn't have any kids. Abraham and Keturah were, but not Isaac and Rebekah. And then, finally, they have twin boys. The one that came out first, so he's just barely the eldest, came out all red and hairy, and so they called him a piece of work, Esau. And the second boy came out holding on the heel of his slightly older brother, and so they named him Heel Grabber, Yaakov, Jacob. The two boys were not identical twins, and their personalities were not the same either. And as we've mentioned, as they were growing up, Esau seems to be more interested in being alone out in the wilderness and hunting, which makes him much more connected to his father, who probably also enjoyed hunting, but definitely enjoyed eating the meat from such hunts. While Jacob kind of hung around the home tent. He hung around the tent encampment and spent a lot of time with mom as he was learning the ropes of how the tent city works. And so we see this dichotomy between the two of them. When they were 15, their grandfather passed away. So I want to emphasize the fact that they had 15 years of their life with Grandpa Abraham, and the only grandma they knew was Keturah. And this is the story of Abraham's death. Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac, so he'd already made the arrangements that Isaac would be the major heir. He would become the head of the tent city, the desert community, or the sheep and cattle community that belonged to Abraham. All of the servants would start working for Isaac as soon as Abraham was dead. Then verse 6 says, and to the sons of his concubines, which would be, first of all, Yishmael, because concubine here stands for a secondary wife. So Yishmael is already moved away from the Abrahamic tent city. He and his mom are living down south in the Negev. And he has already started his own family. He'll end up with 12 boys and an indeterminate number of girls. So to the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts. So Abraham gives some sort of specific inheritance gift to Yishmael. And then he does the same thing for the sons of Keturah. And the ones that are old enough, he does this. While he was still living, he sent them away from his son Yitzhak eastward to the east country. So that means that Abraham insisted all of his boys, other than Isaac, needed to go outside the boundaries of Canaan to set up their own families, to start their own ethnic groups, as it were. And only Yitzhak remains in Canaan. And then Abraham dies. Verse 7, these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, 175 years. So our chronology says that he passed away in about 2001 BC at 175 years of age. He has been in the Promised Land for 100 years because he came there when he was 75. Abraham breathed his last. He died in a good old age. In fact, he is much older than many of the other members of his particular genetic line. He died in good old age, an old man full of years, and he was gathered to his people. Now, that seems to be a poetic phrase that has two thoughts in mind. One is his spirit goes into the presence of his ancestors. And we read in the book of Luke a story told by Jesus that has Abraham in the spirit world surrounded by his people. And so that's one of the aspects of this phrase. But the other aspect is that he is gathered in the funeral procession with all of his people there, and they take him to lay his body to rest with those that have passed before him. Now, he is going to be the first of his family line, other than Sarah, that ends up buried in this cave. But there may have been others buried nearby from his tent city, honored servants and things. So verse 9 says that Yitzhak, who is 75 years of age, and Ishmael, who is going to be 88, maybe 89, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, east of Mamre, the field that Abraham purchased from the Hittites. There was buried Abraham with Sarah, his wife. So it's a great funeral procession. I'm sure that the twins were there, grieving over the loss of Grandpa. We know that all of the servants would have been there. Grandma Keturah obviously would have been there. It would have been quite the scene. It's possible that Hagar was there as well. She would have been a fairly aged lady herself, since her son is 89 or 88. So she would have been up in her 90s, maybe even past the century mark. And so everyone says goodbye to Abraham. And so now the story shifts to Yitzhak, but more specifically, we will watch it shift to Jacob. Verse number 11. After the death of Abraham, God blessed Yitzhak his son. Now, this is that Abrahamic blessing we've talked about, that God had said to Abraham, I'm going to bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. So that's the Abrahamic blessing that is upon Yitzhak now. And so Yitzhak settled at Beer Lahairoi. Now that's interesting because that place got its name from Hagar. She called it the Well of the Living One Who Sees Me, because that's where she had her big God experience, and I believe became a follower of the true and living God. But now it's apparently become one of several tent city locations that they run their sheep and their herds out of from time to time. These folks are living the Bedouin lifestyle, so they settle their tent city in a place for a while, and they graze in the region around them. And then after they've used up the resources, they pull up stakes, move the tent city to another of their locations, and graze there for a bit until they use up the available resources, and then they move on. So the places that we know for certain they've been using is that they have been at Hebron, or Mamre, at this time. That's where the funeral cave is. That's where the tomb of Abraham and Sarah is located. Beersheba had been a place that Abraham was using, but we're about to find out soon that it went into disuse immediately after Abraham's death. It was no longer a place they'd been using. And then we have Beer Lahairoi. I think they may have even gone to the north and used the place between Ai and Luz, or Bethel, and maybe even as far up as Shechem. So they just move around, move around, move around. Now, with that in our understanding, that Jacob kind of settles down at Beer Lahairoi for the next part of the story, we go down to verse 29. Verse number 29. And we tell a story that happens after Grandpa's death at some point. But before Esau gets married, because that comes later in the chronology. So it's between the time they're 15 and the time that they're 40. So somewhere in that range, this story takes place. Genesis 25, 29. Once, when Jacob was cooking stew, now he's cooking a lentil dish, Esau came in from the field and he was exhausted. Now, he's probably helping run the sheep. So it's possible he's coming back from that, but we also know he goes out and goes hunting a lot. So he comes back, and he is just all in. I mean, he is at the end of his physical abilities. That's how the portrayal is. And so Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted." So he sees what Jacob is cooking, because Jacob kind of hangs around at the tent city. And he is in need of refreshment. He is in need of replenishment of his energy levels. He says, "Let me have some of that red stuff there." And that's why his nickname will eventually become Edom. There's actually multiple reasons for this. Remember, he came out of his mother's womb all hairy red to begin with. And you know how the nickname Red gets attached to people with red hair. But also, he is about to do something in order to purchase a red stew that will solidify again the nickname Red for him, Edom. Verse 31, Jacob said to him, "Sell me your birthright now." Now, the birthright seems to be the right of the firstborn to inherit the double portion. It is going to be distinct from the blessing, which is a verbalization given by the Father to the Son, that God is going to bless you, and He will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you, and in your seed the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. The Abrahamic blessing is going to be part of that. Now, normally, the birthright and the blessing go together. But Jacob says here, I want to be counted as the heir. You're not as interested in this stuff as I am. This is my extrapolation of this conversation, is that Jacob has been learning the ropes of running Tent City from his mom. He knows about the flocks and the herds, because all of that is accounted for out of Tent City. And so he says, I want to run things when Dad's dead, because you're not really interested in it. You'd rather go out there and hunt and be by yourself. And Esau, I think, acknowledges that reality in what he says back. Esau said, I'm about to die. You know, I'm starving to death here. Now, I don't think he's literally starving to death, but he is in extremis. So he says, I'm about to die here. Of what use is a birthright to me? You know, how does that help me to be the patriarch in waiting here? Sure, you can run things when Dad is dead. Verse 33, Jacob said, you swear that to me now. So it's not good enough that you just simply say I can do it. I need you to take an oath in the name of God. Swear to me before El Elyona, El Shaddai, God Most High, the God of our father Jacob, the God of our father, of our grandfather Abraham. You swear to me that you will not challenge me for the birthright. Because remember, they're twins. They're born seconds apart. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Now, how binding is that? It's not altogether clear because of the story how binding it might have been, whether or not it would have been held up by the legal framework of the era. Because when Yitzhak does die, Jacob has already received the Abrahamic blessing as well. And so there is no real challenge to that, other than a momentary threat from Esau earlier that he was going to kill him for doing all this stuff. So let's just go on with what we know. Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew. He ate, he drank, he rose, went his way. And thus, now this is the commentary by the inspired prophet Moses. Thus Esau despised his birthright. He didn't care about it. So that helps us to do what I was doing earlier, the extrapolation that Jacob wanted to be the heir who takes over the tent city and takes over all the property and all of the herding and the shepherding and all of that, while Esau wasn't really interested in that. Chapter number 26. We'll leave the story of Jacob and Esau and let them grow up. Now, there was a famine in the land, talking about the land of Canaan, besides the former famine that was in the days of Abraham. So we've got another episode of the weather pattern coming off of the Mediterranean being disrupted so that they're not getting the winter rains and the very early spring rains in abundance, filling the water table up and making sure that the crops get that burst of hydration that they need in order to put on their heads of grain. So that sets it up for a bad harvest. If that happens one year, you can probably just hang in there and wait for the rains to come back the next year. But what if the next year's rains also fail? And that seems to be the sort of thing that we're seeing here, is that we have several years in a row that the weather pattern's been disrupted, so they can't have their crops, and that is very problematic. Their crops are being used in particular to feed this tent city population that they have, made up of, I'm guessing, probably a couple of thousand people. Because we know in the time of Abraham that he had 300 plus home-born servants. And that would mean that there were probably several hundred more servants that were already serving Abraham in other aspects of Tent City. And so this is now under under Yitzhak, so we've got even more. And all of those people probably have families, kids. So when we picture this, think of Tent City having a population of a couple of thousand people, which is going to be more than most of the actual physical clay cities, stick-built cities that are in existence at this time. So Yitzhak, understanding that he needs to find a place where the water is still available. It says that Yitzhak leaves Beer Lahairoi, which is in the northern Sinai desert, or the Negev, the southern part of Canaan, and he went to Gerar. Now, Gerar is a city maybe a mile or two from the Mediterranean coastline. It's not very far from modern-day Gaza, and it is on this river system that drains the interior part of Canaan into the Med. And so down closer to the coast, there is enough of a water table left that there are wells that can be used in order to provide water for your animals. So that's what Isaac is doing. He's going down closer to the coast where the water table is still high enough, and he buys watering rights and grazing rights from Abimelech, the king of the Philistines. Now, Philistines is a bit of an anachronism here. It's a title of a group of people that don't really show up until the time of Moses, but this is Moses writing this. And in the time of Moses, there were some Philistines already living in this general vicinity. So he thought of it as the place where the Philistines live. Now, after the time that Israel occupies the land under Joshua, even more people of a Philistine background move into this territory, and that will happen because of a mass migration out of some of the islands of the Mediterranean. But for our purposes, when it says Philistines here, it means the Canaanites living along the coastline of Canaan. Okay? So Isaac went to Gerar, the city, to Abimelech, who was the king of that city. Abimelech is clearly a title. It is not the same Abimelech that Abraham dealt with. This is probably his son, possibly, since these guys live shorter lives than the blessed line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it may be the grandson of the original Abimelech. But Abimelech, in its literal meaning, is my father is king. So you can see that's probably a title. So he who is God Almighty appeared to Yitzhak and said, don't go down to Egypt. So he does not want him to leave the promised land. Dwell in the land which I will tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and your offspring, your seed, I will give all of these lands, and I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham, your father. I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and I will give to your seed all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Now that's all very important because, as Paul teaches in Galatians chapter 3, the seed specifically that will be the blessing to all the nations of the earth is Jesus Christ. He is the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that fulfills all these promises. The land actually belongs to him as well. But for our purposes here, the point is that God tells Yitzhak, you stay inside the boundaries of the promised land. Don't you dare go anywhere else, because this is where everything's going to be blossoming in the blessing. Verse 5, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So because of that, Yitzhak stays at Gerar. And we'll tell more of that story the next time we get into God's Word.